Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Red Carpet Podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to the many novels out there for young adults and the authors that write them. This is a podcast for readers made by the readers. We have a vast group of bloggers from all over the globe with different interests and focuses that would like to share their thoughts and perspectives with you. You may be familiar with some of them via their blogs. This is a collaborative podcast. We have a rotating roster of contributors that each have a monthly segment. The podcast will be released every fortnight, and you'll be able to download us via our sites, Podbean and iTunes. My name is Adele, and this was my little brainwave. I've had a great time blogging with some of these people, and I've been overwhelmed by the response I've had when inquiring if people would like to be contributors for this podcast. So this is by the people, for the people. I just a thought before we start. Please know that many of our contributors are recording for the first time, so we're just ironing out some kinks and bits and pieces. The audio isn't fantastic on some, but we're getting there, okay? We will improve, and if you think you can do better, send in a contribution to theredcarpet@gmail.com. And away we go. Taryn's Random Ramblings.
Hi everybody, this is Taryn from thechickmanifesto.blogspot.com. Today I bring you Taryn's Random Ramblings, which is so named because I can't really find it in myself to talk about just one topic or just one type of book all the time. Instead, you never really know what you're going to get with me. In fact, you know about as much as I do at this point. Also, I want to let you know that as I've been recording myself and listening back, it sounds like I have braces or a retainer or something. The microphone must be really shoddy at this point, but suffice it to say, I'm not a 12-year-old girl and there are no braces or hardware in my mouth. For those of you who read either my blog or Steph, Reviewer X's blog, we started what is known as the VC Andrews Read the Good Trash Challenge. I'm not really going to talk about the challenge itself. Instead, I want to talk to you about the book that started it all for me, the most famous VC Andrews book, which is Flowers in the Attic. It's fairly controversial, though not necessarily on par with, say, the Satanic Verses or The Catcher in the Rye, but it's still pretty out there. It's about four children, the Dahlengangers, particularly Kathy, the oldest daughter. The kids and their parents live this perfect blonde-haired, blue-eyed existence until a tragedy strikes when their father is killed. Their mother then takes the children to live with her parents on a huge estate in Virginia. It turns out the grandparents, who they've never met before and who won't have anything to do with their mother, are super rich. Their grandfather is about to die, so their mother figures she can worm her way back into his good graces and get written into the will. The catch is that her father didn't approve of her marriage, and the kids must remain locked in a room in a faraway wing, and he can't know that they're alive. But they have an attic to play in, so it won't be so bad. But it turns out that the grandparents didn't approve of the parents' marriage, not because of a dumb reason, you know, like their father didn't have any money. Oh no, they had a pretty good reason. It turns out that Mommy and Daddy were actually half niece and half uncle. The grandmother calls the children devil spawn and is convinced that they're going to follow the same path as their parents. For a while, things aren't so bad, actually. I mean, their grandfather's on death's door and he's expected to die any day now, and they're living in this huge room and they got this huge attic to play in. It's not so bad. But gradually, what was supposed to be a few days, or a few weeks, starts turning into months, and from months into years, until finally, when they do get out, and yes, spoiler alert there, they do finally get out, it's been over 3 years. Almost 3.5, actually, if I'm remembering correctly. And also, when at first, their mother used to visit them every day, and finally her visits start becoming less frequent. She used to bring them presents, and she thought that would kind of make up, you know, for the fact that they're not getting any good vitamin D and getting to go outside. She starts coming less and less frequently, until finally there are long stretches where she doesn't come at all. And some of the kids are still holding out hope, you know, like, Mom's going to get us out of this, and we're going to get out. And then they kind of start to catch on that maybe she doesn't want them to get out after all. And also, I mean, at first they were eating pretty well. And finally, the food starts becoming not only less frequent, but less filling. And then they're kind of on the verge of starvation there for a while. And also, while all this is going on, Kathy and Chris, who were the oldest two, they start out at about 12 and 14. Fast forward 3 years later, they are going through puberty, and those hormones are strong, and they end up having sex, which is probably what the book is most known for. And in a really weird situation, one of my most common referring URLs, actually, on my blog is from people who were doing searches for Flowers in the Attic sex scene. And, I mean, it's not terribly explicit or anything, and it's not even really long. And I've told people that if they really want to know the details, they can email me and I'll send it to them. But, I mean, what a weird thing to search for. Am I right here? Anyway, Flowers in the Attic is kind of heavy psychologically, but is nevertheless still a really quick, really fun read. It's one of those you can't put it down. I think the first time I read it, I was about 12 or 13, and I was at a slumber party, and everybody was watching a scary movie, and I am pure chicken. My heart is yellow. I am afraid of scary movies. So a friend of mine had this book, and I started reading it, and I could not put it down, and I made her let me borrow it, and I loved it, and it was this. And one of the things I really like about V.C. Andrews' books is one of the things I like about most books, fiction and nonfiction alike, which is that they focus a lot on family, particularly many generations of the same family. And when you take the Dollinganger series and V.C. Andrews in general, you're going to get a lot of that because there are a lot of series and each one focuses on a family and all the families are really screwed up. So if you think this is screwed up, you ain't seen nothing yet. But that's all I've really got time for today. I want to say thank you to Adele, a big thank you for asking me to participate in this podcast. I know some of the people who she asked to do this, and I love them to death, and I read their blogs religiously, so I'm just really happy to be in such great company. I look forward to being back next month with something new, different, and random, so I'll see you later.
New to my bookshelf with Hope.
Hey everyone, this is Hope from Hope's Bookshelf, and today I'm going to be reviewing the recently released Cracked Up to Be by Courtney Summers. The summary from the back of the book says, "What's the worst thing you've ever done?" When perfect Parker Fadley starts drinking at school and failing her classes, all of St. Peter's High goes on alert. How has the cheerleading captain, girlfriend of the most popular guy in school, consummate teacher's pet, and future valedictorian fallen so far from grace? Parker doesn't want to talk about it. She just liked to be left alone, to disappear, to be ignored. But her parents have placed her on suicide watch, and her counselors are demanding the truth. Worse, there's a nice guy falling in love with her, and he's making her feel things again when she'd really rather not be feeling anything at all. Nobody would have guessed she'd turn out like this, but nobody knows the truth. Something horrible has happened, and it just might be her fault. I love this book a lot. I had seen lots of good reviews about it, and so I kind of made my mom buy it for me from Amazon so I could read it because our library hadn't gotten it yet. And Parker's character was written in a wonderful way. She's not the normal, I love the world, I have everything type character that you see a lot today. She was actually pretty much the opposite of that, and she kind of hated the world a lot, and she just didn't really even want to be living here anymore. She just wanted to move on and not have to deal with the issues that she had dealt with in the past. Summers really got into Parker's head. She did a great job with writing a character who is so unlike the people and the characters that you read about and see today. She really got into the whole I hate the world, I hate people, I don't want to talk to anyone thing that Parker has going on. The idea was also very original. I haven't heard anything about, nor have I read anything that was quite like this idea before. The flashbacks were mixed in just the right places. It would be going from normal day to a normal day in Parker's life, and then randomly mixed in were these flashbacks that Parker had, and each time you get a little more of the same flashback, it keeps you wanting to read and just like keep going so you can figure out what happened and what was so horrible that it turned Parker's life into the total opposite of what she was before. Overall, this book was wonderful. And I would recommend that if it sounds like something you would like, to go out to the bookstore and get it. I pretty much see everyone being able to relate to Parker. That's all I have for you today, and I hope to see you next time. Bye.
Fresh Mate with Christy.
Hey everybody, it's Christy from the Story Siren. Welcome to Fresh Meat. You're probably wondering what exactly Fresh Meat is. Basically, I'm going to be giving you the heads up on some upcoming debut novels. We have three novels to discuss today. The first is You Are So Undead to Me by Stacey J. It's a zombie novel. All Megan wants is to go to homecoming. Unfortunately, every time she leaves the house, she gets trailed by a bunch of slobbering undead, making it a little hard to score a date. Not that it matters. Her crush, fellow settler, and total hottie, Ethan, treats her like an annoying kid sister anyway. When someone in school starts using black magic to turn average, angsty undead into flesh-eating zombies, it's up to Megan to stop the zombie apocalypse. Her life, and more importantly, homecoming, depends on it. Honestly, I was expecting a little bit darker theme from a zombie novel, but it ended up being lighthearted and funny. There's a steady dose of suspense, action and humor, romance, which always makes it a good read for me. Megan is your typical teenage girl, besides the whole helping the undead thing, but that's what makes it such, you know, a fun read. I had no idea who the culprit was.
Actually read this one, I can say that I do recommend it. The second novel we're going to talk about is actually a series by Jessica Burkhart. It's called Canterwood Crest. The first novel is entitled Take the Reins. When Sasha Silver and her horse Charm arrive on the campus of the elite Canterwood Crest Academy, Sasha knows that she's in trouble. She's not exactly welcomed with open arms. One group of girls in particular is used to being the best, the brightest, and the prettiest on the team. And when Sasha shows her skills in the arena, the girls' claws come out. Sasha is determined to prove that she belongs at Canterwood. Will she rise to the occasion and make the advanced writing team by the end of her first semester? Or will the pressure... Take the Reins is coming on January 27th from Simon & Schuster. And technically this one is a middle grade novel, but I'm going to go ahead and group it in here with my young adult novels. So hopefully... And last but not least is Bones of Fairy by Janie Lee Sumner. Janie actually has a few children's books that she's published, but this is her first young adult novel, so we're going to go ahead and feature it. The war between humanity and fairy devastated both sides, or so 15-year-old Lisa has been told. Nothing has been seen or heard from fairy since, and Lisa's world bears the scars of its encounter with magic. Trees move with sinister intention, and the town Lisa calls home is surrounded by a force that threatens to harm all those who wander into it. Then Lisa discovers she has the fairy ability to see into the past, into the future, and she has no choice but to flee her town. Lisa's quest will take her into fairy and back again, and what she finds along the way... Bones of Fairy is coming on January 27th from Random House Books for Young Readers. Looks like 2009 is going to be a huge year for fairies, and I'm really excited. Actually, I read a debut novel by Leslie Livingston in 2008 called Wondrous Strange. It was released in December. Really good fairy book if you're a fairy. I guess that's it for this segment of Fresh Meat. Hopefully you enjoyed it and you're still with me. This is my first podcast ever, so I'm just hoping that it wasn't too terribly awful. So I guess until next time, happy reading.
Presenting Lenore Presents.
Hi, this is Lenore from presentinglenore.blogspot.com, and this is the first installment of Presenting Lenore Presents. Today I'm going to talk about one of my favorite science fiction subgenres, dystopias. Science fiction asks the what-if questions, like, what if there was life on Mars, or what if little green aliens attacked Earth? Dystopias ask, what if society was really, really fucked up? How would people live? And what would they do about their situation? Authors build fictional dystopian societies as a device to criticize some hot-button cultural issues of their day, and to show us what our future might be like if the human race doesn't get their act together. George Orwell wrote his dystopian classic, 1984, in 1948, and publicly asserted that it was written as a response to the oppressive communist and fascist regimes of that time. Today's dystopias explore societies built on everything from marketers' abuse of consumer privacy, such as in M.T. Anderson's Feed, to government-mandated plastic surgery, such as in Scott Westerfield's Ugly series. In 2008 alone, we had Suzanne Collins' The Hunger Games, which can be seen as a criticism of reality TV, Allegra Goodman's The Other Side of the Island, a criticism of extreme environmentalism, and Little Brother by Cory Doctorow, a criticism of the termination of human rights in the name of national security. Not all dystopias are necessarily criticisms, of course. They can also ask purely speculative questions such as, what would happen if children were left to rule themselves? This was, in fact, asked twice this past year, at least, in Michael Grant's Gone and Bonnie Dobkin's Neptune's Children, two books I didn't feel a pressing need to read because this particular question was quite adequately answered for me by William Golding's Lord of the Flies. Post-apocalyptic fiction is a very similar and often interchangeable subgenre, which explores the question, what if there would be a complete breakdown of society due to some cataclysmic event? Books in this category include The Road by Cormac McCarthy and Life as We Knew It by Susan Beth Zephyr. Something that I've noticed is that dystopian novels written for adults tend to have unresolved and/or depressing endings, while novels written with a teen audience in mind tend to have more uplifting or inspiring endings. If the teen protagonist doesn't find a way to overthrow the society completely, he or she at least carves out some measure of freedom within or outside the society. YA novels also tend to be less brutally realistic. In Life as We Knew It, Miranda and her family are holed up at home and trying to survive after a meteor hits the moon and pushes it too close to Earth, causing massive societal disruptions. There are no more food deliveries, so people are starving. At one point, Miranda's cat goes missing. Had this been an adult dystopia like The Road, the cat would have been roasting over a fire and in some starving belly by day's end. But no, the cat comes back, and he even has enough dry cat food to last him until society can get back on its feet again. I found this unrealistic in the context of a post-apocalyptic landscape. But despite that very specific plot criticism, I really love YA dystopias. They are generally creative, exciting reads. I think they are a great way to get teens thinking about and discussing what-if questions, and hopefully thinking about ways to make our world a better place, so that we don't actually have to live out a dystopian or post-apocalyptic future. Thank you for listening, and please check out my blog for book reviews, including many of the books I mentioned here.
The Ossification Experience with Adele. Hey, you're listening to the Ossification Experience.
This is the segment where you get the download on everything YA-related down under. My name is Adele, and I'm the blogger podcast behind Pastigity Snark and the Sarah Dessen Diarist.
Today, I'm going to talk about one of my favourite Australian authors, Melina Marchetta, and her novel, On the Jellicoe Road. Now, this week, this novel won the Prince Award for 2009, and I am beside myself with joy because I have loved Melina's writing since I was 12 and first picked up Looking for Ella Brundy. If you haven't read that, please find it. It will be worth it. So I'm going to talk about this novel that was under the radar for the Prince Awards and ended up taking it out. Let's read the blurb, shall we? I'm dreaming of the boy in the tree. I tell him stories about the Jellicoe School and the townies and the cadets from a school in Sydney. I tell him about the war between us for territory, and I tell him about Hannah, who lives in the unfinished house by the river. Hannah, who's too young to be hiding away from the world. Hannah, who found me on the Jellicoe Road 6 years ago. Taylor is the leader of the boarders at Jellicoe School. She has to keep the upper hand in the territory wars and deal with Jonah Griggs, the enigmatic leader of the cadets, and someone who she thought she would never see again. And now Hannah, the person Taylor has come to rely on, has disappeared. Taylor's only clue is a manuscript about 5 kids who lived in Jellicoe 18 years before. She needs to find out more, but this means confronting her own story, making sense of her strange, reoccurring dream, and finding her mother, who abandoned her on the Jellicoe Road. Now that's courtesy of Penguin. So, why should you read this book? Well, on the surface, if I explain the details of Jellicoe Road, I will sound, one, like I'm describing the usual hijinks of teenagers. For instance, clubhouses, school, homework, teachers, dorm rooms, romance. And two, that I'm being deliberately vague because I haven't read the book other than the aforementioned summary. The truth is, this book is too wonderfully written and so complex that for me to explain too much is for me to ruin it, and I don't want to rob you of that experience. There are many threads continually unspooling in this novel, and I promise you that between the characterization, the beautifully realized setting, and the intricate narrative, you'll be reading this again straight after finishing the final page. So what is this book about? Well, Taylor Markham was deserted by her junkie mother when she was 11. She now resides at the Jellicoe School, where every summer they fight a territory war with the cadets and the townies. This war has been fought for the last 16 years, and as a newly elected head of her house, Taylor must front the Jellicoe School's efforts. What is truly magnificent in this book is the combination of the familiar and the vastly strange. The narrative is discombobulating. It continually skips to and fro, giving you glimpses into many characters and past events. The characters feel like they belong to you. Taylor is flawed. Who wouldn't want to be in her situation? But her defensiveness is chipped away by the unwanted leadership position and the return of Jonah Briggs, one of the most intriguing male characters I have seen in a very long time. I want to meet him. I'm going to ask something of you. When reading this novel, you'll need to be patient. I promise this patience will pay off as all the storylines unfurl and reconnect. It is the mastery of Marquetta's storytelling that makes this utterly sublime. Everything is deliberate in this book. Every mention, every recollection, every introduction. The plotting behind this novel would have been insane. It would have made my brain explode. Jellicoe was this month nominated for the Sybil Young Adult Novel Award, after also winning the Prince Award for 2009. I think that it should win the Sybil Award as well, as it would be richly deserving of this award. Jellicoe Road is exquisite, and if you haven't got your hands on it, I'm imploring you to do so. Another Australian author you should check out is Margot Lanigan. She received a Prince of Honour for her novel Tender Morsels. Apparently it's pretty dark, and apparently some people argue that it shouldn't be considered a YA novel. I can't give you my personal opinion because I've yet to read it, but Australian authors are going strong at the moment, and there are many to choose from, so make sure you go by Persnickety Snark, where we highlight Australian authors, and check out some of the websites and blogs that are out there. Another award I'd like to talk about is the Golden Inky, which is an Australian-centric youth literature award. How is it decided? Well, a list of 10 Australian books and 10 international books are selected by the Centre for Youth Literature. This list is read by a panel of 6 judges, who then whittle that list down to 6 books, 3 Australian and 3 international. Then voting is open to teen readers on Insider Dog, and the winning Australian book receives a Golden Inky and a cash prize, and the international winner receives the Silver Inky. In 2008, James Roy won the Golden Inky with Town. The Silver Inky was awarded to Jenny Downham, who wrote Before I Die. Jenny Downham is a UK writer, and if you've read that book, number one, get tissues, and number two, just be prepared to get blown away by the poetry of the written word in that book. Wow. So this is going to be a regular column. Please make sure that you keep an eye out for Australian authors, particularly Melina Machetta this month. And make sure you email in and tell me how much you enjoyed it. Or if you didn't, either way, give it a go. Thanks very much, and I'll see you next time. Transforming Echoes with Renee.
Hi everyone, my name is Renee Barney. I am an academic reference librarian in the United States, which means that I work in the college and university setting, delivering research assistance, readers advisory, and technological assistance. I also teach courses in information literacy. Mainly this means learning how to create a good research question, how to ask the right questions and find the best resources and information, also how to effectively research using books, databases, the internet, as well as other resources. In addition, I also help students to read more effectively, take better notes, develop outlines, format research papers correctly. I have a personal interest in history and cultures, and I love reading biographies and memoirs and historical fiction. I also love my job. I love helping people to access information, understand it, apply it to their lives. When information becomes knowledge, and knowledge becomes wisdom, the world becomes a better place, which is what we should all want. So the theme of my segment came out of my love for culture and history. I want to look at cultures and groups of people and the major events and issues that have occurred in human history surrounding these groups. By looking at diaries, memoirs, biographies, autobiographies, and historical fiction, we can step into the world of these events and learn from them. The only way to better our world is to learn from our past. We don't want to make the same mistakes again, and we don't want to forget the accomplishments that have been achieved. So I have named my segment Transforming Echoes. The definition for the word echo is to mimic, copy, or repeat. We don't want to just echo the past in our futures. We want to learn from the past events and transform what happened into something better for the future. Even with a good event in history, we should seek to transform the echo, to build upon the successes already achieved. So my counsel for the day is to never stand still and never go backwards. Always look forward and seek to learn something new and grow and better yourself and the world. Now, normally in this segment, I'm going to review a book or two, talk about the issue or event that is the basis for the book. I might recommend some other resources relating to the topic as well. Currently, I'm reading The Book Thief by Zusak. It is a fictional story about a girl living in the time of the Holocaust. I'm not quite done with that book. I want to spend some more time with it before I review it with you guys. So that's going to be in the next episode. But I do have quite a few books that I'm looking at discussing about various peoples and issues and events, such as immigrants and their struggles, slavery, cultural experiences and differences, war, conflicts in the Middle East, revolutions, just a ton of stuff. It should be a really enlightening and enjoyable journey, and I do hope that you'll join me. Also, on occasion, I want to give you a review of a helpful resource, which is what I'm going to do today. I want to look at the resource called Novelist. It's a reader's advisory database that is available through most public libraries, so check your local library to see if they have it. They'll usually let you use it for free, whether you have an account or not. Sometimes they'll require that you have an account, but just check with them. Novelist is, like I said, a reader's advisory database. It's N-O-V-E-L-I-S-T. It covers both fiction and some nonfiction, and you can search the database by the basic things that you can search in other catalogs and databases, such as subject, title, keyword, author, genre, publisher, series. But it also allows for some great limits, such as reading level, grade level, lexile range, author's gender, author's nationality, as well as the author's cultural identity. You can search by the number of pages in the book, publication year, Dewey call number range. You can limit by reviews and the awards the books have won. Searches can contain any combination of the many choices of limiters. So you could search for books by African-American women in historical fiction. So you can see the detail that you can go into and how specific you can get to find books and novelists. It's a really fun tool. They also have some other services that they offer, feature articles, book talks, book discussion guides. They have a recommended books list. So it's a really great resource. Do check it out. I'll probably be talking about it again. I have a book list that is so huge I probably will never be able to read them all, that I have found through Novelist, so it is a really fun thing to search. You find a lot of great new reads in there. So, Novelist, check it out. I also want to mention from time to time, and I'm going to go back to this, YALSA. And YALSA is the Young Adult Library Services Association. It is a division of the American Library Association, but YALSA is actually a worldwide organization. They focus in recommendations for reading, listening, and viewing options for teens. YALSA has been around for about 50 years, and I'll be talking about it some more in the future. YALSA does have a website. It's http://www.ala.org/YALSA, which is YALSA. So you're welcome to go check out that website. They have some great book lists and awards and things, but I'll be talking about them some more in the future. So basically, this is what I have for you today. Thanks for listening. I hope that you'll return for some great discussions of books and resources. I really look forward to this segment and interacting with all of you. Thanks, and until next time, happy reading. Bye.
Comics Corner with Justin.
Hello, everybody. This is Justin, and this is your graphic novel section. So for the first one, I wanted to talk about one of my favorite comic stories of all time, written by my favorite author of all time, and that is Why the Last Man, written by Brian K. Vaughan. So, you may ask yourself, what is Why the Last Man? I've never heard of this. Well, shame on you, first of all. And secondly, get ready to have your mind blown, my friend. A mysterious plague has killed every man on Earth except for Yorick Brown. The sole Y-chromosomed survivor is an amiable, headstrong young man, the son of a U.S. congresswoman, and, as it happens, an amateur escape artist. He spends most of the story on the run from a tribe of self-styled Amazons bent on eliminating the last vestige of patriarchy. He's also trying with a bioengineer who may be responsible for the worldwide gendercide to figure out why he survived. Hoping to reach his girlfriend in Australia, good eye, mates, and of course contemplating the repopulation of the planet, with stunning artwork by Pia Guerra, and like I said, written by my favorite author of all time, Brian K. Vaughan. I think this is the pinnacle of what comics can be. This, and along with Watchmen, I think, are probably my two favorite comic stories of all time. The writing is top-notch. The dialogue is awesome. The story just, it captures your imagination, and from the first page to the very end, the whole story is 10 volumes in all. It's just an incredible journey that you go on with Yorick and seeing him evolve over the years as the only male on Earth, along with his monkey, Ambersand. And just seeing, it's just so interesting to me how the world would, or a possible way that the world would evolve if females ran the world and if there were no males whatsoever. So it's just a really interesting journey, and I highly recommend Why the Last Man.
The Red Carpet Hotline. The Red Carpet Hotline is a voicemail account we have opened where you can call in and have your say or give your own review, and we will play it during the show. Now, the number is 206-339-3245. Again, the number is 206-339-3245. This number will be available on the show notes. Now, this is an American number, so it will be quite expensive if you're out of state or international. The hotline is a forum for you to have your say. Do you agree with one of our contributors? Did you read a book based on our recommendation? Is there a question you have for our resident librarian? Just remember that normal call charges do apply. If you'd prefer to record an MP3, we'll add it to our call section anyway. This might be ideal for non-American residents like myself. We will not play any call that uses profanity or other probably offensive material, though. Just a bit of warning. So make sure you give us a call on 206-339-3245 and have your say. I hope you've enjoyed the Red Carpet Podcast Episode 1. We're just starting and we're bound to get better and bigger with every week. Just to let you know, we're missing two contributors this week, Steph from reviewerx.blogspot.com and Jocelyn from teenbookreview.wordpress.com. They're pretty bummed out they couldn't record in time, but obviously school is a preference and sometimes laptops suck. If after listening to this podcast you think you would like to be a contributor, then email us at theredcarpet@gmail.com with your pitch. Is there something different that you think should be covered? Do you have the time to contribute 5 minutes of audio every month? Email us. You might choose to submit a one-off segment and just send it in to us for you to use. Of course, it's up to our discretion whether we use it or not. You can give us feedback via our email at theredcarpet@gmail.com. Please remember, red is spelt like read a book, R-E-A-D. If you'd like to direct the email to a particular contributor, please write their name in the subject line. If you'd like to be a contributor, put Adele in the subject line, A-D-E-L-E. Thank you very much for joining us, and we can't wait to be back in a fortnight. Until then, happy reading.